morning, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of Thursday in the Doghouse. I'm your host, Rini Premeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer. Some of you may not be aware that my half-hour radio show is actually a free class in understanding and caring for our pet dogs. We've had many programs when we've talked about normal and problematic dog behaviors. We've discussed canine health issues. We've talked about how dogs communicate using body language. And we've spent quite a bit of time discussing the needs of puppies. I want to remind everybody that if you've missed any previous shows or you weren't able to catch an entire program, you can always listen to any show you want by going to my website, www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Click on the page marked Rini's Radio Show, and then click on the podcasts that interest you to hear any program in its entirety. My guest today is Susan Belanda. Sue is a regular visitor to the doghouse. She's been training dogs since 1961, and her specialty is training search and rescue dogs. She's written 6 books, numerous articles, and has been published in the Proceedings of the Journal of the National Association of Search and Rescue. She's trained dogs for drug detection and even mold detection. Sue and I will be talking today about the reasons dogs bite. We'll talk to Sue in just a minute. Please let me tell you about the services I offer in the South Jersey area as a professional dog trainer. Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rini Premeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338. Or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338, or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Good morning, Sue. Welcome back to the doghouse today.
How are you today?
I'm good.
Lovely weather.
Yeah, it is. As always, I have a ton of questions and very little time, so we better get started.
Okay.
All right. My first question is, so many people think that dogs bite because they're dominant or vicious. Is this a correct assumption?
No, it's not. Actually, there are 4 different levels of biting, and the dominant aggression type is only the highest level.
Okay, so can you tell us what those 4 levels are?
Well, you have puppy biting and mouthing. You have corrective biting. You have defensive biting. And then you have aggressive biting.
Okay. How much of a role does good breeding play in whether or not a dog does become a biter?
Well, that's a tough one to answer because some dogs are bred to be quicker to bite than others.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, dogs that have a stronger protection instinct would be more likely to bite than a dog that's, say, a hunting dog.
Right.
But that's a real general, and I stress a general rule of thumb, because you have all kinds of biters in all breeds.
Okay.
Dogs bite. That's what they do.
Mm-hmm. Are there specific breeds that are or were bred for aggression?
Well, there are. There are some breeds. They're not common breeds, fortunately. You know, and I hate to name them because I don't want people to get a negative feeling about these dogs.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some South American breeds that are bred because of the nature of the way people live down there. These dogs can be very, very aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
To anybody but family. To their family, they're very loyal.
Okay. And what about breeds that are bred for protection work or military work?
There's no dog specifically bred for that. It's just a certain type of dog that fits well with that job.
Okay.
Okay, you have to think of that as a job. And a dog that's trained to be a protection dog, such as a military dog or a police dog, is doing it because he's trained to be that.
Okay.
Okay, he's doing a job.
Mm-hmm.
And like any other job, there are some individuals in the common breeds that are not good at it, that don't want to bite people.
Mm-hmm.
And there are those who really get into it.
Okay. If I buy a Rottweiler, for example, who is commonly known as a protection dog, although they actually are herding dogs, if I buy a Rottweiler from a reputable breeder, can I raise a friendly dog with a stable temperament, or might I wind up with a dog who might not have such a great ability to be a good companion pet, but may lean more toward that protection job?
Well, if you do your homework, and that's the key here, and you get a really well-bred Rottweiler who's not bred for being hard, certain lines are bred to be hard. These are the people who want to breed dogs for protection, even though it's not the breed itself. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
And if you get a well-bred Rottweiler who's got a typical Rottweiler temperament, that's the general temperament for the breed, what you'll get is a dog that's very nice, very friendly, very loyal, but if somebody were to attack you, the dog might defend.
Mm-hmm.
And I say might because that varies from individual to individual.
Mm-hmm.
Rottweilers are very sweet dogs, well-bred dogs. They make lovely companions. I've owned one.
Mm-hmm. I love training them. I mean, I haven't really met too many that I would say were aggressive per se,
no.
Especially when, you know, we get them in our puppy classes. They're wonderful to start fresh, you know, as a clean slate. If you do that, then you've got a really wonderful chance of teaching these dogs to be great companion pets.
Well, the key here, and I want to stress this, is that the best home protector, to be a good home protector, is one who is well socialized and friendly to strangers. And that goes against what most people have in their mind. But it's sort of like a dog that knows who's a friend, knows who is an enemy, is a safe dog.
Mm-hmm.
But when you isolate a dog trying to make it be protective, trying to make it repel people,
mm-hmm.
what the problem happens, and I've had many, many people that come to me with this problem, the dog can't tell the difference between friend or foe.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks everybody is an enemy and therefore becomes a biter.
Right.
And a problem. But
right.
The best dog that's a protection dog is the one who is the most socialized, because
mm-hmm.
then they recognize when somebody breaks into your house or forces their way in, they recognize this is not normal behavior and this person is a danger. Plus, anybody who's going to do that gives off a scent the dog recognizes immediately.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing. A lot of people are not doing research. A lot of people, when they go get a puppy, are not doing the research about the breeder. They're not getting referred to reputable breeders, and so they wind up going to puppy mills, or they wind up buying a dog on the internet. And so we have a lot of dogs out there that are protection dog breeds whose temperaments are quite questionable. And so now we wind up with dogs that do bite. And some of them can be partially socialized. I mean, you know, I've met some dogs that become aggressive in their adolescent period. And I tend to think that it's just not the greatest training that's going on in the home, where maybe this dog could have been a really good dog and the people just let the dog go with his instincts. You know what I mean? So what happens then?
You can take, and I've seen this many times, you can take a dog from a very bad situation and they seem to just skate through it without any ill effects.
Mm-hmm.
You can take a dog from a marginal situation and they turn really untrustworthy.
Right.
So a lot has to do with the individual dog's temperament as well as its environment. You can't just blame nature or nurture.
Okay.
It's a blend, because I have seen it many times. Look at dogs from puppy mills come from horrendous situations where they never get socialization. They're physically hurt because of the way they were raised, and yet they're the sweetest animals that you could want.
Mm-hmm.
This has to do with genetic makeup. There's no other excuse for that.
Okay.
And then you take a dog who's maybe given a good home, but not socialized, not trained properly, and they turn out bad.
Mm-hmm.
And yet another dog in that same situation would be good. And this is the problem. People get lucky with their first dog, and they get a wonderful dog, or they remember a dog they had as a child, forgetting all the work their parents did to make that dog be that way.
Right.
And they say, oh, I want one of those for my kids, and then they don't really do anything with it because their memory of it is lacking those details.
Mm-hmm.
Then it doesn't turn out the way they expect,
mm-hmm.
and they're disappointed.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
This happens a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
I mean, we know today, we've known this for years, but science has just come to the realization that dogs are a lot smarter than they were ever given credit for.
I can say that with actual fact. I mean, I know that they're smart. Sometimes I tell people I think they're smarter than we are.
Well, sometimes they are in certain things, but the bottom line is if you're dealing with an animal that's that intelligent, then it means the way you raise them and train them and what you teach them is even more critical.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
That's where people fall short because they don't give the animals enough credit. We'll never know exactly how intelligent animals are because we can't test them. We haven't got a test to test that.
Mm.
But we can tell by their behavior, what they learn. You know, that's how we judge it.
Okay. Let's say we have a dog of any breed. Doesn't matter. We're not really focusing on the breed right now. If somebody has a dog and they start to see aggressive behavior, a dog starts to bite the owner, what could set the dog up for doing that behavior?
Well, there's a lot of things. It cuts across all breeds. You get dogs that they're not really biting their owner. They're mouthing or they're trying to manipulate. You have to remember, dogs' mouths are their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to use their mouths to interact with their environment. They have very limited use of their paws in terms of manipulating things.
Right.
A puppy who's taken away from the litter too soon or who's not given a socialization will not learn how to inhibit their bite.
Right.
And learning to inhibit their bite is best done by their litter mates and their mother.
Mm-hmm.
Then they go home with family, especially kids. They relate to the kids like another puppy, a plaything, and they don't realize that they're biting as hard as they do.
Mm-hmm.
And their little needle teeth hurt.
Yes, they do.
They can actually puncture, especially children whose skin is not that tough,
mm-hmm.
or elderly people.
Right.
You know, you have to realize that, you know, this is why a bite is not just a bite. You have to analyze the circumstances. But the thing that causes the most problem is people treating dogs like people,
mm-hmm.
especially little dogs. I had a case recently where a little dog was only biting two members of the family, and it turned out those were the two members that treated it like a baby.
Okay.
It felt it had the right to do that, because
mm-hmm.
things that we do that to show affection
mm-hmm.
or things that we think are kind things to do,
mm-hmm.
the animal, a dog, will interpret it as something entirely different.
Absolutely.
And that's where the miscommunication comes in, and the dog thinks he has the right or supposed to behave the way he does.
Mm.
And people, well, I don't understand it. I love this dog, and I treat him so well, and I hug him, and I kiss him, and I do all these things. Dogs don't show affection that way.
That's correct.
It means entirely something different. I mean, when a mother comes back to the litter, all the puppies, when they're young, will go and kiss her face.
Mm-hmm.
And this is part of an act of submission to the mother, and it also triggers regurgitation, which in the old days was the way they fed the puppies. I know that sounds terrible, but it's no different than pureeing food for a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens, this little puppy who's basically been low man on a totem pole goes home to a family, and they're picked up, carried, and kissed.
And there you go.
Yeah, and the puppy says, wow, I died and went to heaven. I didn't have to even earn it. I'm king of the hill.
That's right.
Then the dog, according to dog rules, feels he has the right to do corrective biting when things don't go the way he wants, such as he's laying on the sofa or the chair and somebody wants to move the dog and he turns around and bites.
Mm-hmm.
That's how a lot of this stuff happens. So it's not aggression per se.
Mm-hmm.
It's very normal behavior for the dog interpretation of where he is in his family.
Yeah, glad you used the word his interpretation, because humans are definitely thinking of dogs as reasoning like humans do, and they don't. I'm constantly reminding people that this is an entirely different species.
Oh, yes.
You know?
Another big mistake people make is they adopt a dog from a bad environment, and they lavish it with all this affection.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog
they
has
try to make up for his past, which they'll
make
never
up
do.
Past, but the dog doesn't understand that it's affection, and he could actually interpret it as being attacked or bullied.
Wow.
And so it's very hard for people to do it, but the best thing you can do is let a dog be a dog and treat him like a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that means keeping your hands off of them,
mm-hmm,
and keeping your face away from them.
Right.
Especially a dog that comes from a puppy mill situation who never grew up being cuddled or held.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the physical contact these dogs have had have been negative.
Right.
Either from other dogs or from the puppy mill operators. And they don't understand that you're showing affection.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, it hinders their ability to be rehabilitated.
What about dogs that are raised with physical punishment? Might those dogs turn around, what people like to say, he turned on their owner?
Well, again, most of the times when a dog turns on their owner, it's because the dog is issuing what we call a corrective bite.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that they just seem to bite, like you'll get people say, I don't understand it, the dog came up to me and wanted to be petted, and I petted him and he bit me. The reason that happens is because people correct the dog for giving the warning. You should never, ever reprimand a dog for growling.
Mm-hmm.
You should interpret what's going on and why the dog felt the need to warn you to back off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a growl is. People assume if a dog growls, it means he's going to bite, and that is not true. The bite is the last resort. So
mm-hmm.
people correct the dog for growling so the dog doesn't give the warning. He has nothing left to do but do the corrective bite.
Okay.
And there are different levels of corrective bite. So, unfortunately, according to our laws, a bite is a bite,
mm-hmm,
regardless of what kind it is. And some very good dogs that are not nasty dogs per se, just misguided, have been euthanized because of that.
Can we touch a little bit on resource guarding? So what about dogs that bite people because they're guarding their bones, they're guarding their food, or they're guarding other people in the family? Maybe you can explain to people what causes this.
We don't know exactly what causes it. I mean, some dogs who have had a very good upbringing and from good breeding resource guard. Most resource guarding, though, occurs from puppy mill dogs, pet shop dogs, because they've had to fight for their food. And they learn that if they don't fight for their food, they don't eat.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog has no concept that there's a whole bag of food and a warehouse of food and that food isn't going to run out.
Mm-hmm.
They've had to fight people, even from good breeders that will take one big dish of food and put it down for a whole litter to eat is encouraging.
Correct.
And setting the stage for the dog to learn to resource guard, because even among well-bred, well-tempered dogs, there's always going to be the one who wants to eat more than the other and push the other one away. And then, you know, it could be very subtle,
mm-hmm,
to us, but it's not subtle to the dog.
Right. I've seen it where we not only have the resource guarder who was the most bold puppy in the litter who was pushing everybody out of the food bowl, but we also sometimes have the little runt who is the last one to get the food and then comes into a home and realizes she has her own little food bowl.
Right.
And we can get it from that dog also.
Right.
So it's either the top or the bottom.
Well, it can be in between, too, because don't forget the ones in between all have to fight for their food as well.
Mm-hmm. But this big, big food dish at the breeders is very common, Sue. I mean, most breeders that I've talked to say that they do that, and they have no idea what ramifications there are from doing that. This is just a common practice.
Well, it is, unfortunately, and they don't realize. I mean, they could have litter after litter after litter over their lifetime, and maybe only a few of them turn out to be serious resource guarders.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it depends on the individual dog's temperament.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, why even set it up?
Right.
if they start teaching the puppies to eat from their own dish and not steal from the other, they're doing a good service. I mean, my dogs, all my breeds that I've ever had in my lifetime, could, number one, share a bowl or eat out of their own bowl and never touch the others.
Mm-hmm.
I had to teach some of them that. It didn't come natural.
No, I mean, even when I'm doing puppy classes or I'm working with a puppy, I always give the owner food bowl exercises to do to make sure puppy does see that somebody coming toward the food bowl is a good thing, somebody reaching down toward the food bowl and dropping a treat in the bowl is a good thing, and being touched, you know, just stroked once and walk away.
So you teach
the puppy that no matter what happens around the food bowl, nobody's going to take your food.
Right, and they have to learn. I mean, sometimes puppy or an older dog will grab something that you don't want them to eat outside, and you've got to be able to take that out of their mouth.
Right. So you teach them to drop it.
Train them to drop it on.
That's right.
Which most
teach them to drop it.
Have the wherewithal to do that.
Yeah. Well, there's your importance of training. You know. What about owner guarding? I didn't work with them yet, but I mean, I had a consult with some people who actually. Their idea was that they wanted the children to take stuff away from the dog to prevent resource guarding. I mean, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And these are aggressive dogs that they have, by the way. So,
right.
Holy moly.
People do that. And it has to be done, again, you have to teach the dog first and then let the children do it after the dog learns.
Okay.
I never, ever like children training dogs.
Yep.
And the reason is that you're asking a child to act like a parent.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the dog looks at the kid and says no, what is the child going to do?
Mm-hmm.
What I do is I like the adults to train the dog first and then let the children work with the dog after the dog knows the rules.
Right.
Safe.
Right.
And that's how it should be done, because you're putting a big burden on a child to ask them to actually train a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And I get many, many clients in the years past that wanted their children to go through obedience with them, with the dogs, and I said, absolutely not, because it's not a good situation at all.
What age would you involve a child in the dog's training? Let's say you have a 7 or 8 year old child and everybody wants to come to puppy class. You don't see that as a bad thing, do you, for the child to get involved in teaching the dog to sit and things like that, do you?
Yes, I do.
You do?
Any child working with any dog.
Really?
Because, like I said, when the dog is already trained, it's my personal experience with basic obedience and puppy kindergarten is that, number one, if the family's there, including the kids, most kids can't sit still long enough to watch. And they distract the dog.
Mm-hmm.
They distract other dogs. The other thing is the kids watch you do it, and they go home behind the parents' back, and they try it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's better to have one person with each dog, work with the dog, and then when the program is finished, everybody in the family can work with the dog.
Mm-hmm.
Look at it this way. Dogs don't speak English.
Right.
Dogs communicate primarily through body language. Everybody has a little different way of communicating. And if your dog is learning, it's sort of like a person trying to learn a new language in 5 different dialects.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Think about that.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So to make it easier for the dog to learn, once they know the basics and they know what the word sit means and the word down means and they know the rules, you can't pull on the leash, it doesn't matter if there's little differences between one person or the other.
Right.
And you have to also realize that a dog has a whole different relationship with each person in the family.
Absolutely, especially with the children.
So that makes it difficult for a dog to learn when 5 different people are trying to teach it.
Mm-hmm.
There's inconsistencies then.
Well, that's a point. That's a good point. Hopefully, you know, everybody will take your advice there.
Well, think about it, especially with a young dog. I mean, they don't speak English. They don't understand our body language.
Right.
And you have this one jerks the leash. This one lets it go too far.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your dog only knows what you train them.
Right. Well, I don't like it when people give the children a responsibility. I don't like it when I hear people tell me that they let their 8-year-old or 9-year-old son walk the dog. I think that's ridiculous. and giving the child way too much responsibility. And God forbid, what would happen if the child's out there walking the dog and a loose dog came upon them or something happened? That child's not in a situation where he can take on responsibility for the dog. He can just about take on responsibility for himself. He can't do that.
This is true. And what I tell people, after the dog is trained, the child can hold the leash close to the dog while the owner holds the other end of the leash.
Right.
And they could share the leash and walk that way.
Mm-hmm.
And this way, if the dog lurches or pulls,
mm-hmm.
then the jerk on the kid isn't going to be too bad.
Right.
They're still going to get a little bit of a
right.
there. But,
right.
you know, this is true. I mean, it's not just another dog coming. It's what if the dog decides, hey, there's a rabbit, I'm going. This is why, as much as we want our children to interact with our dogs, the way that you can have children interact with the dog is after the dog's been trained and under control, the child could teach the dog tricks.
Okay, that's a good idea.
And that works. They learn to work with the dog, but only under adult supervision.
Always.
If the child's old enough, mm-hmm. he could teach the dogs to shake, to sit up, depending on the breed, what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
Roll over, play dead. I mean, there's a whole slew of tricks, say your prayers and sneeze mm-hmm. on command. And this is where clicker training is an excellent resource.
It sure is.
Children can do it.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, it has to depend on the child,
mm-hmm.
whether they are mature enough or they're interested enough. I mean, I've seen cases where a parent buys a dog for a child and the child's interested for 2 weeks and they want nothing to do with the dog.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's common.
Yeah.
That's very common.
Yeah, and so what happens to the dog?
Very little. Or he gets winds up being rehomed because the adults think, I don't want this responsibility. The kid wanted it, and now they don't, so I don't want to do it.
That's right. So I recommend with my clients, if they want to get a dog for the child, I tell them don't.
Right.
I said, if you want to get a dog for you and you're willing, I mean, where is your child going to be 15 years from now?
Right.
Are they going to college? Are they going to get married? Are they going to move away? Who's going to take care of the dog?
Mm-hmm.
So I always tell my adults, never get a pet unless you want it and you're willing to take it. Case in point, my cat was my son's cat. He grew up and went into the service, and guess who has the cat?
You do.
That's right. And I knew when I agreed to get the cat that would happen, and
sure.
that was okay.
Yeah.
But it was originally his cat.
So,
and right now, he couldn't take it from me if he tried. But
Sue, we only have about a minute left, and I want people to know where they can get more information about you and about the work that you do. You have a program at Kutztown University.
Yes.
Very, very quickly, darling.
I have two programs running at Kutztown, one for students that want to be trainers and one for students that want to be behavior consultants. And they can go on my website, which is www.sbulanda.com. That's sbulanda.com. They can find links to my examiner articles and to Kutztown to find information about this stuff.
Okay. I think you're a fabulous, fabulous person. You've done so much for the dog world and for helping people work with their dogs. You've created programs, and I can't say enough good stuff about you.
Oh, thank you. And you, too. You've done a great job as well.
I'm trying. We're going to make a date again soon, Sue. I want you to come back, and I do want to discuss aggression in more detail. So that they can at least prevent it before it even starts, you know, when they go and get a dog. We really want to educate them here.
Right, and that's the key to prevent it.
Absolutely. So I hope you have a great day, and I want to thank you again for coming to the doghouse again, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
All right, darling, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. I want to thank my listeners for tuning in today. Please tune in again next week. I promise that you'll hear another interesting program, and please take our advice. When we give it on this radio program, the people that I interview are absolute experts in this field. Talk to you next week.